Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms. I'm in London, and I'm about to have a discussion on world affairs with my old friend Lockwood Phillips in North Carolina. This week, we're talking about North Korea and the increasingly bellicose war of words going across the Pacific between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Have a listen in. Thanks very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. And again, this evening's program has been pre-recorded to accommodate our foreign editor's sleeping schedule, since it's almost midnight as this program begins to air. But with that, as our introduction, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and, of course, Look Ahead Radio. Look Ahead Radio heard on radio stations around the country and, of course, here on the talk station every Friday evening. And with that introduction, Tom, good afternoon to you, or actually good evening. And before we get into any of the real details of the past week and going forward, what's the weather like in London?
Miserable. Absolutely miserable. It has been raining, cold, and I mean really pelting down all day. Some of the tube lines in London are flooded.
So, and we're going to get to this a little later on. This is the time of year for people to leave, I guess, for vacation, right? And holiday.
Oh, absolutely. You know, London is empty. Christmas and August are my two favorite times of year in London because there's no one else here.
Love that. I love that. All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. And as you can tell, he's in London. But that will be changing here soon because he's going on, as they say, holiday. But we'll get to the details of that a little later on in the program. I need to start off with the breaking news, or the top of the fold news, being Korea, and particularly Korea and the United States, and particularly Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. What is the news? How is that being covered in Europe and around the world?
People over here are becoming increasingly concerned at the ratcheting up of the rhetoric. And they're concerned, looking at it from, obviously they think Kim Jong-un is completely nuts and nobody supports him. But at the same time, they are worried that what you've got is a situation of two schoolboy bullies shouting at each other, "I'm going to hit you. No, I'm going to hit you. No, I'm going to hit you." And eventually, one of them will have to hit the other because they're doing it in front of all the other school children, and not to hit would be an humiliation.
You know, that was brought up to me this morning, and it was related to the President Trump's comments about a red line when he was talking with Syria,
yes,
about Syria and the issue of chemical
The problem with the red line is, as Barack Obama found out, if you do let them cross it, you look really stupid.
And here's the other issue: the president's remarks.
And if you don't let them cross it, you blow up the world.
Right.
In this case.
So this is a real challenge. The comments, fire and fury. How was that received in Europe? That is being
well,
President Trump's
remark.
Well,
that's what I mean by ratcheting up
okay.
the rhetoric. I mean, fire and fury implies that any sort of nuclear attack would be responded to with a nuclear attack, which would possibly wipe North Korea off the face of the earth.
Okay, but here's...
Now, I'm not saying that's not what should be done if North Korea launched a nuclear attack. I'm just saying that by saying things like that, by ratcheting up the rhetoric, you're not making it less likely, not when you're dealing with someone like Kim Jong-un.
But here's the question for you, Tom, and again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, Kim Jong-un has been acting like a belligerent bully for, the past 12 years, approximate period of time during which he's been president. And there's been no change in his rhetoric or his actions. As a matter of fact, they've actually ratcheted up. Of course, the further discoveries and uncovering, if you will, of notices about his nuclear program and his missile defense or missile offensive posture. This is pretty scary. We've We've seen no major change in his attitude or his posture. The question is, what point do we finally say enough is enough? And what about, I mean, when I ask that question,
okay,
I'm talking about
from
the European.
Down because I will agree with almost everything you've just said. That's not in dispute. I think it's how the rhetoric that's used to respond to his rhetoric, and especially now that you do have China and Russia on board with UN sanctions. I mean, those sanctions which the UN has just passed are really tough.
But wait a second, Tom. Are you telling me?
Let me finish, Lockwood.
Okay.
The Chinese and the Russians have 90 days that they have to report back. And they have to report back with detailed analysis of how they have enforced those sanctions. And I think that the administration should say, all right, we've got 90 days. Let's keep our mouths shut.
But here's the question. It's a twofold question. First, really, there's a feeling that you can trust Russia and China, particularly when it comes to a belligerent third party, Syria, or for that matter, North Korea. And then the second question is, possibly because of the president's rhetoric having heated things up significantly, maybe Russia and China have finally come to the understanding there really is potential conflagration here.
That is a possibility. I think, though, you know, you've got a specific time frame on the first point of whether or not you can trust the Russians, Chinese, and that always is, especially with the Russians more than the Chinese. Mm-hmm. That always is in doubt. Both the Chinese and the Russians are very good, or they have been in the past, at abiding by the letter of the law, not necessarily so good at abiding by the spirit of the law. Now, in this particular instance, there's a specific time frame in which they have to prove that they're abiding by the spirit of the law, and that is 90 days. Now, I think during that 90-day period, there should be, on the part of the U.S. administration, essentially a cooling-off period. Well, they should aim for a cooling-off period. Ignore what Kim Jong-un is going to say. He has no support from anyone. So, you know, although he has nuclear weapons, he doesn't really count because he's got no negative, nil, zilch support.
Well, I think that there's grave concern here in the States that support from his peers is of little consequence because, as you initiated the conversation, Tom, he is perceived as being, well, less than stable. We'll leave it at that. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us this evening. Tom, before we go to the next break, let's talk about the experience of Great Britain with Brexit. We may have to take a break in the midst of this, but you've got a British politicians and civil servants are clashing over Brexit. What's happening there?
Well, the British politicians have all gone away on their annual holidays, stroke mm-hmm. vacations. Theresa May went off a walking holiday. Boris Johnson, Liam Davis, they've all gone off on holidays. All these people responsible for Brexit negotiations. And they have all been saying, we will not pay a penny in any divorce settlement. Mm-hmm. And the EU has been saying, you've got to pay us $100 billion. What are you talking about?
Wow.
Okay. Well, in their absence, the civil servants have put forward a proposal to pay about $36 billion. And the politicians are not happy.
Wow. Wait a second.
They're not happy at all.
I can imagine. The civil servants, that seems to me that's pretty presumptive on their part.
You have to understand how the system works over here. You don't have as many political appointments as you do in the States. So the civil servants have a lot more influence and power than they do in America. There are, for instance, in the Foreign Office, there are about half a dozen political appointments. That's it.
Mm, wow. Let's go to the heart of this. What will be the upshot of this in light of the fact that the civil servants have taken it upon themselves to present a dollar value for, if you will, the divorce from the European Union? What will be the reaction when the politicians return to the parliament?
The politicians themselves, one of the reasons why the civil servants have done this is because the politicians can't agree.
Okay.
Because although a lot of politicians are saying we don't want to pay a penny, there are others, led by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, who says, don't be ridiculous, we owe them the money. And it's just, it's creating more divisions within the government, which is already incredibly divided. And it just shows that the government never has had, does not at the moment, and is unlikely to ever have any strategic policy on Brexit.
I'm going to get back to this for just a few more moments from now with Tom Arms here on lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Of course, lookaheadnews.com, his website, and Look Ahead Radio, heard on stations around the country, around the world, pardon me. And of course, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 14th of August. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Europe's leaders start returning to work next week. British Prime Minister Theresa May is back at 10 Downing Street with growing threats to her leadership and the Brexit negotiations. In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel and her main rival Sigmar Gabriel are both on the campaign trail. Merkel's CDU/CSU partnership is currently at 40% in the opinion polls. Gabriel's Social Democrats are at 25%. The election is on September the 24th. The International Criminal Court on Monday will continue its trial of Ugandan warlord Dominic Ogwen. He is charged with attacks against the civilian population, murder, attempted murder, torture, cruel treatment, other inhuman acts, enslavement, outrages upon personal dignity, rape, forced marriage, sexual enslavement, pillaging, destruction of property, and persecution. The ICC will also deliver its reparations order in the Al-Mahdi case on Thursday. Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi pleaded guilty to the crime of damaging mankind's cultural heritage. He led a jihadist attack in 2012 on the Malian cultural center of Timbuktu. India and Pakistan both celebrate 70 years of independence next week. The actual independence in 1947 was marred by the bloody partition of India, which resulted in between 1 and 2 million deaths. Pakistan's Independence Day celebrations will also be marked with the opening of a new international airport at Islamabad. The airport is seen as one of Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif's key projects aimed at improving the country's infrastructure before elections next year. Japan is one of the key targets for North Korea's nuclear weapons. On Thursday, the newly appointed Japanese Foreign and Defense Ministers, Taro Kono and Itsunori Onodera, fly to Washington for talks with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Secretary General James Mattis. North Korea's nuclear weapons and the threat of the current war of words spilling over into actual conflict will dominate the discussions. Other diplomatic talks include the formal start of renegotiations for NAFTA on Wednesday. Scrapping NAFTA was a key campaign pledge of Donald Trump. He has since substituted the word renegotiation. In Alabama, there will be primary elections on Tuesday to fill the Senate seat of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The election will be held on 12 December. Sessions has been attacked by President Trump for recusing himself from the Russian hacking investigation, but he's won the praise of conservative Republicans. Angola's ruling MPLA holds a Congress from Thursday to Saturday next week to replace retiring party leader President Eduardo dos Santos, who has led the country since independence in 1979. And that was next week's news today so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned after this message for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, you were chatting just a few moments ago about Brexit and the fact that there is this division within the European British community, particularly in Parliament, over the future of Brexit and the fact that many of the leadership are not interested in paying any kind of a divorce settlement for departing from the European Union. And of course, there is question. You mentioned the Exchequer having a comment to the effect that, well, there is some money due to the European Union. Looking at the disparity of points of view and opinions, what does this mean for Prime Minister Theresa May? She was 6 months ago the leader of Great Britain and the party in general. But now, what's the future?
$64,000 question, that. Nobody really knows. A lot of people predicting she could be gone by Christmas. In a few months' time, we're going to be having what's called the party conference season. Once a year, the major political parties have a big conference lasting 3 or 4 days in each case, at which they sort out the policies for the coming year, elect their national executives, and, if necessary, elect new leaders or pass votes of no confidence or attack their leaders. Mm. And the Conservative Party conference is going to be very interesting to watch.
Now, if she were to lose, have a vote of no confidence, what happens? Do the Conservatives then appoint a new prime minister, or does this introduce a possibility of another election?
It could be either one, because they don't have a majority. You know, they're in power because of the Democratic Unionist Party, who may feel that they would want to withdraw their support from a new Conservative leader, in which case there would almost certainly have to be a new election. I should think that they would first try to elect a new leader who would try to ensure a continuing relationship with the DUP and then cling on to power a little bit longer. But it certainly, things are very unstable over here.
What we're going to focus here in a few moments on the continent, that being Europe, related to the European Union and, of course, other events there. But, Tom, with this continuing unraveling, is one of a better description, both of support within Parliament, but also what about across the country of Great Britain? What is the future then of Brexit? Is it conceivable that Great Britain could, in fact, rescind Brexit? It seems to me that we're pretty far down the path, and the absence of a clear leadership or plan for all intents and purposes should be making a lot of people very uncomfortable, not only in Great Britain, but also, I would think, in Europe.
I wouldn't like to say one way or the other on that, because my feelings are definitely in favor of the European Union, and right. I have a sneaking hope that's exactly what will happen. But certainly, that if you don't have a strong government, it makes it very difficult to negotiate in Brussels.
Right.
And as the negotiations become more difficult, people begin to realize that perhaps it wasn't such a good idea. And the whole thing is thrown into question again. It's inevitable, but it will happen. It is happening. To what degree it will happen, to what degree it is happening, it's difficult to say.
All right. Let's move to the European continent. And I want to talk to you about, real quickly, the issue. And I'm looking at my list here. It's not on there, but I just want to hear, what is the opinion of Emmanuel Macron, now the president of France? How is he being perceived? We've been seeing stories here recently that he is being criticized. And of course, part of this has to do with the future of the European Union. And then we're going to get to Germany. But what about France? What role are they playing in this? And what about the recent election of Emmanuel Macron?
Well, Macron is, not falling out of his honeymoon period a little bit. He's having some problems with the defense establishment.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to cut it back a bit, but at the same time increase their responsibilities, which sounds to be contradictory. On the EU, I think he's very pro-Europe, always has been, always will be, wants France to take a leading role in Europe. One problem which he's having at the moment is with his wife. Now, he and his wife aren't rowing, but he's rowing with the rest of the country about the role of his wife. He wants to create a role of first lady, which France has never had. The wife of the president has always been a very quiet person in the background, never taken a public role. And Macron wants his wife to take a public role and be recognized as doing so and have the term of first lady. That doesn't fit well with the French.
But let's talk about the other aspects of Emmanuel Macron's approach. He has been perceived as a new leader in Europe. How is that progressing? You use the term honeymoon. Is his honeymoon with the rest of Europe still good?
Lockwood, nothing progresses in July and August in Europe. Nothing. Okay. I don't know how often I have to tell this to you. It's more or less as it was a few weeks ago.
All right.
People are sitting on the beaches. They're drinking their Pernos. They're sunbathing topless in Saint-Tropez now. They're not really thinking much about Macron.
Let's see if we can do this in just a few moments. Vacations and why Europeans think that Americans are uncivilized are practically...
And barbaric.
Are barbarians. Why is that? We're talking about that. You're about to take a holiday. What is it about Europeans that they take a dim view of Americans on this?
Well, you're just about the only country in the world, for a start, without any statutory holidays. Everyone else in the world, the government decrees to the employees, you have to give your people a break. And about 25% of Americans are not even given any sort of break by their companies at all. And most of them, it's a week, 10 days, 2 weeks. And a lot of those are so frightened that they're going to lose their jobs if they take a holiday that, according to a survey recently done by the BBC, half of them don't take their vacations.
Now, wait a second. We don't trust the BBC here in the United States, number one. But number two, many of folks don't take vacations because they really enjoy their jobs. And then thirdly, we here in the States are really focused on productivity. I mean, it does.
I'm glad you raised that. I'm glad you raised that. Let me just give you an example here on productivity. The world's wealthiest country, is Luxembourg.
It's one of the smallest countries and has the least invested in international politics and defense.
$103,000 a year per capita income.
It's an exclusive.
Guess which country also has the highest productivity?
Which one?
Luxembourg.
Look, let
me finish.
Very
let
quickly.
Me finish.
Very
Guess quick. Which country has the shortest official working week in Europe? 29 hours. Luxembourg.
What's the population of Luxembourg?
I really don't know.
It's probably
it's about half the 800,000 or something like that.
Exactly.
I can tell you that France and Germany and the United States all have about the same productivity of 63% or something like that.
No,
but they're all on the same productivity levels. France gives up to 9.5 weeks holiday a year, if you count in all the bonuses. There is no relationship between productivity. Or if there is, it's a negative one. Productivity and holiday entitlement.
I disagree. We have to look at the size of the economy.
That's what makes us interesting. We agree to disagree.
We do. And Tom Arms, I just have to say, Tom, looking at the productivity in the United States and where the greatest innovations are occurring, and also, well, quite frankly, as you keep pointing out, where the center of leadership is located, we're very busy people here in the United States, not only trying to do our work, but quite frankly, at times, we would argue, doing the work of the rest of the world. We'll leave it at that.
Well, you need to give yourselves a break pat yourself on the back.
With a
week on the sand.
If we could just give more of the responsibility, and this is what we're trying to do, which you criticize me for here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. He criticizes me often because I keep saying, we're trying to give you back some of the responsibility. But that's another story for another time. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and, of course, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. This portion has been pre-recorded because of Tom's requirements to get some sleep at some point throughout the day. And it's nearly 11 o'clock as we are, nearly midnight as we are airing this portion of the program here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, let's move on to other issues related to elections. I mentioned President Macron in France, but let's talk about the elections in Germany. We've got a whole series of items here. We're going to run through bullet items. But the upcoming election campaign in Germany, and of course, we chatted a few moments ago about the future of Brexit and the European Union, and of course, Chancellor Merkel has been a big proponent of strengthening the European Union, and she is facing an election. So it's yours to tell us what's happening in Germany.
Well, she starts campaigning on Sunday. She's coming back from her three-week holiday in the Italian Alps. And the campaign kicks off on Sunday, and she will be addressing a rally in North Rhine-Westphalia. Saturday she addresses it. Sunday, the campaign officially begins. She is storming ahead in the polls at the moment. They show her party, the CDU, with its coalition partners, the CSU, at 40%. The next nearest is the Social Democratic Party at 25%. So they're 15% ahead of their main opponents.
Okay.
Now, of course, you know, as a lot of elections have proven, it's a long way until Election Day on September the 24th.
Now, tell me about the relationships with elections there in Germany. Now, in Great Britain, it's a matter of greeting people. It's a very, very reduced means of reaching out to the voters. You have you've described this in the past. It's almost soapbox. Campaigning.
It's very interesting. In Germany, they have very, very tight election rules. They do not allow micro targeting at all.
How do you prevent micro-targeting? I'm just curious that they
basically
don't allow it.
Basically, keeping records of how people have voted in the past and phoning them up and trying to get to come out and vote for you.
But what about, do they get to publicize their campaigns? Is there...
But they are each restricted to one television ad, which is 90 seconds. And the number of times it is shown on television is in direct proportion to how many votes they received in the previous election.
Really?
That's
fascinating.
That's awesome. The amount that is spent, the last election, the winning party, the Christian Democratic Union, spent $30 million.
Mm. Okay.
That's all they spent.
Wow. All right.
I mean, two-thirds of their election money comes from the state and from party membership dues.
Okay.
One-third comes from corporate sponsors.
Here's the other question. Is there concern, since we've talked about this in relationship to both France, Great Britain, and of course definitely United States, is there concern that Russia's playing any role in these campaigns?
I haven't seen anything in the past. I mean, in the recent past. You know, there's been concern in the sense that they have mentioned that we're going to keep our eye on it,
okay,
but nothing yet has come to light.
All right. The reason I bring up Russia and it for a little bit of tongue in cheek, of course, we've been saying here for some time on the programs on the talk station that the public here in the United States are tired of the whole Russia discussion, debate, issue, whatever you want to talk to call it. I'm curious, how much of that issue of Russia is now a topic of concern in any of the media there in either Great Britain or Europe? Or has this also gotten old there as well?
No, it has not. It may be getting old in America, but it is still very much on the front page here.
Hmm.
Let's face it. You know, number of people who like Trump here are, you can count on the fingers of one finger.
No, right. We won't go there. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. I don't want to ask which finger. Let's talk now, Tom, about other events. And we've got several we want to chat with you about Let's start with the elections in Kenya. There's another election taking place. This seems to be a year of elections and campaigning.
It's always time for elections. The vote was this week, and the results are coming in. And now the reason people are watching Kenya is because they're really concerned about violence. Mm-hmm. There were elections there in 2007. I don't know if you recall, but 1,000 people were killed and 600,000 internally displaced as a result of post-election violence. The reason is because the country is divided between two tribes, the Kikuyu and the Luo, and they hate each other.
So this
and the Kikuyu always has the edge.
Okay, this is a tribal issue as much as anything.
It's a tribal issue.
Okay,
it's an example. It's a legacy of European colonialism in the Berlin Conference of 1890.
Okay, I want to move on to other issues, but this is very important. What impact does this have on international relations, particularly in Africa? Because we have several countries that are interested in Africa: Russia, China, as well as the United States, and of course, the European community.
And Kenya is very strategically located.
Exactly.
You know, it's very strategically located for the Middle East.
Right.
You've got the problem of the failed state Somalia on its northern border, where Muslims are gathering.
Mm-hmm.
It's right at that line that separates the Muslim world from the Christian world in Africa. So Kenya is very important.
Well, that being said, are those other countries paying close attention? Is there much interest in this election in the sense of maybe investment of time and effort by these other countries?
Yeah, I mean, they're always interested in what's happening in Kenya for those reasons, and they're always going to be interested in the elections, and they don't want any violence to take place. It would just in any way destabilize Kenya. So they want stability in Kenya. They don't want, if you have instability in Kenya, the fear is that the instability from Somalia will fill that vacuum.
Okay, that was the question. And of course, that is a country that's in the process of rebellion and actually, I would argue at times, even dissembling, breaking up into other countries. But that's a topic for another discussion. Let's move on with Africa, and let's now move to South Africa and Jacob Zuma's vote of no confidence. And also, well, is there a chance that he might be facing some sort of legal issue as well?
Well, he won his vote of no confidence. And it was very interesting. This is, I think, his seventh or ninth vote of no confidence, depending on what you count as a vote of no confidence.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was one of them was an attempt at an impeachment. So I don't think we can call that a vote of no confidence. The man is up on a number of corruption charges.
Right.
Last count, I think, was 792.
So is he going to remain
charged with racketeaking?
And he's
two more years in office.
Right.
In December, there are going to be elections for the party leadership.
Mm-hmm.
He will almost certainly not get the party leadership. It will either go to a man called Cyril Ramaphosa or one of Zuma's six wives.
Wow. So this is again, an issue that I think deserves attention because it is an international issue as well. I've got to move on to two other items because we're running out of time with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Let's move to the Western Hemisphere, Venezuela, and also Argentina. Venezuela, we have a coup attempt there, and of course, there's a question as to whether President Maduro is going to be president for life.
Well, and at this moment, you've got, I think, the foreign ministers from 14 nations meeting in Peru to try and work out a policy towards Maduro and his constituent assembly. And I think they're going to enforce some sort of sanctions against them. He really has crossed the line on several points.
But, you know, the issue is
places.
But the issue is
he's arresting his opponents.
Right. What can the rest of the world do? I mean, you say sanctions. Venezuela's economy is bankrupt. This is just going to pour hot water on people who are already suffering?
I don't know. I don't know, Lockwood.
I'm just curious.
I'll be in that part of the world for a few weeks, and that's one of the things I will be discussing. What can they do? You're absolutely right.
Well, it strikes me as a bit of a reach. Let's move on to one other quick item as well. Former Argentinian president Cristina de Kirchner. Attempting to come back after I thought Cristina had been found guilty of some crimes.
Well, and she was thrown out of office, and she's still, some of her assets are frozen. But they're going to have elections in October. Is it October? Yes. Mm-hmm. Legislative elections. And she's running for the Senate seat for Buenos Aires.
And by the way,
they're having primary elections this weekend.
And her chances?
To select the candidates.
And how good are her chances?
Pretty good. Wow. I mean, she's really good. She's a good populist leader. She's excellent at blaming everyone else for her problems.
All right. That's
may
always,
sound like someone else.
That's always a wise decision. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And of course, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. There are serious problems in the playground at Nuclear Weapons School 101. There's a new boy, Kim. Nobody likes him. He's loud, obnoxious, and into domestic abuse in a big way. Kim is especially disliked by Donald, who's president of the student council, captain of the football, basketball, and baseball teams, number one in his class and popular with all the girls. Donald also controls a big chunk of what Kim regards as his home turf. In fact, Donald and his family have been calling the shots at NSW 101 since they threw the first and, so far, the only knockout punch against Tojo and Hirohito. Donald is strong, very strong. And he backs it up with a frightening array of brass knuckles, baseball bats, knives, axes, swords, clubs, machetes, and the biggest and bestest array of guns ever developed by mankind. Some of the other kids in the playground are a bit envious of Donald. They think he's been throwing his weight around a bit too much. This is especially true of Vladimir and Z. That is why when Kim started building up his rival arsenal, they turned a blind eye. They even smuggled some sweets to him. Perhaps it was time that Donald was taken down a peg or two. Perhaps he could be persuaded to share the captaincy of one of his sports teams or a girlfriend or two. They don't want Donald hurt. They need him. And even though he has occasional problems recognizing it, he needs them too. Kim doesn't have such qualms. He's anxious to prove his tough guy credentials and is not in the least concerned about who's hurt in the process. He's built up his own arsenal and is threatening to attack Donald on his home turf. This is clearly unacceptable to Donald. There's a lot at stake here. Not only does he have to protect his family, but he cannot be seen to give in to the new kid on the block. That would be a humiliation that could lead to the loss of all his captaincies and the big prom date. There's also the issue of deterrence. The knockout punch thrown by Donald's great-grandfather Harry back in 45 has kept the peace in the playground ever since. Except for Vladimir's big brothers Joe, Nikita, and Leonid, no one has seriously challenged the dominance of Donald's family at NSW 101. But that is because his family has always made it clear, without actually saying it, that if any of the other kids took a blow at them, they would flatten them with fire and fury. Except for a slip when Fidel tried to burst through the school gates in 62, no one has ever actually said anything close to those words, because if you use words like that, you may be called to back them up with action. If you don't, you look extremely silly, and your deterrence is totally useless. Today's situation is further complicated by the complex structure of the current playground politics. Plus the fact that the frightening array of both Kim and Donald's weapons means that it is quite likely that an exchange of blows could easily flatten the entire playground, the school buildings, and quite possibly the entire town, the surrounding countryside, and over the horizon and beyond. Playground fights have a bad record for quickly spiraling out of control. And let's face it, as bad as Kim is, and he is really, really bad, Donald has developed a bit of a reputation as an unpredictable bully, much more so than any previous member of his family at the school. At the moment, both Kim and Donald are facing each other toe-to-toe in the playground, hurling insults and threats at each other. "I'll flatten you," shouts Kim. "Just try it, and you'll be met with fire and fury, the likes of which the world has never seen before," spits Donald. The rest of the kids at NSW 101 are frankly terrified and desperately holding back Donald and Kim. Z and Vladimir are so worried that they've agreed to cut off Kim's sweet supplies and his luncheon money. But the two unpredictable bullies continue to shout at each other, and everyone, inside and outside the school gates, are terrified of the consequences of the first blow.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've been following some issues here with elections, but also a story related to a dispute between China and India, or India, as I like to say. And before we get into the topic I always enjoy, we're going to be chatting about here in a few moments, Left-Handers Day. But let's talk about India's issue for peace with China. What are we talking about here?
Well, the interesting thing is, and it's made the headlines, is a boxer, an Indian boxer by the name of Vijender Singh. And he recently beat a Chinese to secure the Oriental Middleweight title, the WBO's Oriental Middleweight title, at the end of which he stood up and said, "I would like to give this championship belt back to the Chinese opponent as a sign of my desire for peace between India and China." And? This has had a mixed response, believe it or not.
By whom?
I would have thought he'd be, "Oh, wow, what a great man." But the boxing commissioner said, "Oh, no, you can't do that." And he's been attacked by a lot of the newspapers. And so forth and so on, which just gives you an indication of the strength of feeling against China India over their current border dispute. I think there's a real danger there. And while we're focused on things like Ukraine and Syria and North Korea, something like the Indo-China border dispute could just flare up and overtake all of them and catch us by surprise because we haven't been paying enough attention to it.
I agree with you fully.
The world is becoming too spreadly thin, or the diplomatic world.
Yep. No, there's no question in my mind about that. Tom Arms, of course, of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. Tom, a topic that I talk about all the time here on my program, and as you know, I am a very open and accepting individual with one exception. And
that, I'm sorry, of course, am I supposed to laugh at that?
No, it's true. You know this. But I do have one built-in bias, and it's a fear of left-handers. And your story coming up now, really, it just enlightens me. Tell us about the International Left-Handers Day.
It is International Left-Handers Day on Sunday. It is a UN day to stop discrimination by right-handed people against left-handed people. People like you, right-handed, discriminating against left-handers. And apparently, two-thirds of the world still has some form of discrimination against left-handed people.
There is no question in my mind, and we've shared this with our program here on Viewpoints, a program I air every afternoon here on our talk station. Lefties are among the most discriminated group in the world, no question about it. And as someone pointed out to me, just simply look at finding a pair of left-handed scissors.
Yeah.
I mean, they're lefties.
Which was a topic on The Simpsons.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. But then again, We conservatives have a great concern about lefties. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. I caught him, didn't I? Now, I'm trying to remember. Tom, are you left-handed? I'm trying to remember. Okay, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms.
Are we talking politically or physically?
I think I've got an answer for both of those. But anyhow, the question for you as we wrap things up, Tom. You're going to Venezuela. You're going to South America.
I'm going to Colombia.
Colombia.
Okay. I'm going to Colombia, but one of the stories I'm reporting for a number of newspapers here in the UK and some in India and Canada, and I will be also visiting my son, who is teaching in Colombia.
Okay.
And we're going to be paddling up the Amazon or down the Amazon to visit some Indian tribes, and I'll be talking to people also about the situation of Venezuela and its potential destabilizing influence elsewhere in South Africa or South America.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing this report. We will be absent, Tom, for about 4 weeks here, but look forward to those conversations and your report when you return. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. Safe travels, Tom.
Goodbye until mid-September.
Bon voyage. Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.